Hello everyone, welcome to the MEF Talks, one of our podcasts, as they're called. We have a brand, I never mention it, but if you go in Spotify, in Apple Podcasts, you can see them. And there is out of a MEF Talks phase one, which is a MEF Talks on Bitcoin. So our, I should say on blockchain, sorry, not Bitcoin. I don't even know the name for this one. I'm going to be told off by Daniele next. But so let me just move over and introduce him instead so he doesn't complain. Hi, Daniele, how are you?
Hey, Dario. Hi. Thanks for having me, as always.
Daniele, it's great to have you, and great to bring a bit of light, because some people out there are still confused Bitcoin and blockchain. But hey, eventually I'm going to learn. until then, here is this chat. Today, Daniele, I hope you are sitting down pensive. I don't know if you need a pipe or an early drink or something.
Some water somewhere.
I just wanted to go back, because we have covered a lot of ground, a lot of topics, and sometimes it's nice to step back and see where are we going. Because in business, the impact of blockchain is more and more tangible. There are things happening. There is also, and we jump in and out, we're not talking about the financial risk or not risk of investing in bitcoins, the cryptocurrencies. We leave these to some others. We're not here to talk about the finance, but we're talking about the business impact. However, so many things are happening. So I need to bring a couple of pieces of news to your attention, and you tell me what you think. First, it's mad out there. You might listen to this podcast later on, so it might be completely different. But we have cryptocurrencies that are going up, and before we're going down to great values. Recently, we heard the, if you are in UK, Andrew Bailey, which is the chairman of the Bank of England, saying it could, you know, you could lose all your money. And we've heard that before, but that's all happening. So the success and the concern. But while these pirates, you know, of cryptocurrencies and values, which is not values, not linked, meanwhile, there is one part which is really, I find it more and more institutionalized of the Bitcoin, but the distributed ledger technologies, everything else that goes like that. It seems to make more and more stride into the business. So, question to you: what's happening right now? Is blockchain becoming part of the institution, or is it still the pirates out there? Is it a dream of disintermediation, or is it just a nice technology that is making things faster and cheaper?
I will start far away from where I want to end. I would start from the macro perspective and giving some insights on from where we're living at the moment from an economic standpoint. So we're living in a world that from a currency standpoint, it's somehow, as we all know, there is a super high growth of capital on an ongoing basis. So governments, central banks, the reserve banks, they are issuing new currency, so new volumes of currency at a speed of light. So we're talking about approximately 20-25% of a money supply injected every single year into the market. And obviously, these create a kind of a situation where we know that inflation is kind of stable, around 2%, a little bit less than 3%, or something in the region of. And so this means all currencies, whatever we're looking at, so from the US dollars down, all of them are kind of losing purchasing powers. That's from the whole perspective. So the fiat money is losing purchasing power. And there are other assets. So, and I take the Bitcoin, but I can take others. So the so-called hard assets that keep value over time, if you observe over a relatively long period of time, let's say 10 years time. If you go back in the last 10 years and we look at the whole assets on the world, on the planet, and look which are those that have increased value over time, which are those that have decreased value over time, we compare against fiat, against the currencies. And the astonishing result is that on average, so Bitcoin, which is the leading asset in the whole blockchain world, is the one that in average, we can calculate in tons of other ways, but in average has increased its value by 200% on a yearly basis, okay? So that's a fact. We can like it or not. It is speculative, yes, it is speculative, but if you look from day one to today, has increased in value by 100%. So, and without going too much in the narrative of crypto, blockchain, Bitcoin, or whatever other asset someone might like, this is a fact. The second fact is that Bitcoin today, the market cap of Bitcoin exceeds 1 trillion. When you have an asset into an asset class that is worth, the overall asset class is about 2.4 trillion US dollars, then you cannot ignore. And it can go to zero. Yes, it can go to zero. Absolutely, yes. Perhaps there's no, you know, no one can say it's impossible. It's quite unlikely for some. It's very likely for others, but it can go to zero. Yes. But without going too much in the narrative of some or the others, we have an asset class and an asset which is exponentially raising because of the network effect. We should not forget that today in the world there are only, in brackets, 100 million people using Bitcoin or having a fraction of it, because Bitcoin is divisible up to 100 million. You can own one piece of 100 million of a single Bitcoin. So if Bitcoin value is $60,000, you cannot really say, if I don't have $60,000 to spend, I cannot own Bitcoin. You can own one piece out of 100 million of a Bitcoin, so for a few cents, if you want, if you like it. And so this means Bitcoin is highly divisible to this extent. It's a fact that it has exceeded a trillion market cap. And for some macro analysts in the space, it's somehow the nearest competitor to Bitcoin is gold. Meaning that people assessing kind of a price of Bitcoin, whatever, looking at the market cap of gold and making the hypothesis that perhaps Bitcoin is better than gold. So Bitcoin will likely reach, they said, the market cap of gold. That's not the financial advice, of course. I don't think exactly the same, because you know, you are making kind of a correlation out of nothing. You might believe that it's like gold, but you might believe it might be even better, because it might attract also the money for people today investing into other asset class, for example, into bonds. And bonds right now have almost 0% interest rate. And bonds is not a 10 trillion market cap asset class. Bonds is 300 trillion market cap. So from a macro perspective, I have to say, things are going into one single direction. So because this new digital asset class, somehow leveraged on the blockchain network, are attracting interest by anybody on earth, regardless of what they say on Twitter, on Facebook, or on a public speech.
Well, Daniele, I think you saw me probably when I was looking at my phone, because I had to check. I have to admit, I own a large amount of blockchain and crypto value. I currently have 0.00094. If you're just wondering, that's about $40 of that. Because I had to try. You have to understand these things, right? So I'm probably not the person you should ask about big investment in cryptocurrencies. I haven't done it, but I've seen how it works. But interestingly, this is done through a bank which offers that. And the M bank, again, you know, you go through an intermediary with one thing. At one point was supposed to be the intermediary-less platform. And we've heard from China, which is actually saying, and not just China, they're going to say, we're going to have an official cryptocurrency value. What's happening? If I get it, it must be that it's not cool anymore. It's like it's way above 100 million people. It's not huge in 7 billion users, but it's a market. It's big,
and it's growing. You know, if you think about, you know, 100 million on planet, and the market cap today is, as I said before, approximately 1 trillion, a little bit more. So And if we just look at the speed of growth of people using Bitcoin, there is a kind of a similar pattern that we have observed into the internet adoption back in 1997. And the speed of growth is approximately 50% growth year on year in average, okay? So this means next year there will be 1.5 million. The next one there will be 100 million, 150 million, 220 million, 300 and something. And in 4 years, 5 to 6 years, there will be approximately 10 times more than where we are today. So approximately 1 billion. So obviously there's no real linear correlation between the number of people using Bitcoin, Bitcoin price, Bitcoin adoption, and all the other metrics. But there is a kind of correlation, not one-to-one, on the more people, because this type of assets, including Bitcoin and others like Ethereum, they follow a so-called Metcalfe law. The Metcalfe law is essentially the law that allows to estimate the value of a network depending on the community effect and the network interactions out of the network, okay? So, and it has been used to model many successful companies building network business like Facebook and Alibaba, TikTok, and others. And it works really well also for Bitcoin and other digital assets class. So in very simple terms, those are digital assets that strongly leverage network effects increase in value depending on how many people are part of a network. So the more people in the network, the more the asset is valued. So, and then if in 10 years or in 5 years from now, there would be 10 times more people, well, the price is likely to increase. It will increase 10 times? No, there's no one-to-one correlation. At least we don't know. It might be, or it might be the same. But there is a, so far, at least has been working pretty well to kind of predict with a much more sophisticated model, which is called stock to flow, how the price evolve over time, depending on the network effect. So in any case, we're living in a kind of an exponential age where the more people joining, the exponential effect in the network and the exponential effect on the value of the underlying assets. So that's why one of the metrics I usually observe to see whether it might make sense to deep dive into a specific asset and a specific asset class is to see how many people using it over time and if the speed of growth is high. And if it's high, it's likely that the price will follow. It will increase over time. So and Bitcoin and other, you know, other protocols like Ethereum, which is, you know, which is skyrocketing right now, again, not financial advice, they are strongly correlated by the number of users, by the number of activities you have on the network, like settlement, total value locked, and other metrics.
Well, it is something else to think about. In telecom, Metcalfe law is like bread and butter. That's exactly what people understand. That's how it probably came up to real B. But, you know, and in IT as well, again, Metcalfe from Intel. So all of those questions of how many connections you have to make, 100 million will grow. But at what point will Bitcoin become just another element of our existing financial structure? That's the point is. So what do I need? Will I still need a Bitcoin-enabled device, or is it just my bank will manage transaction partly in Bitcoin, partly in pound, just as we do today?
It's a complicated question. It's interesting, but it's complicated because some are already thinking that Bitcoin will become the global reserve framework. I don't want to call it currency to do interplanetary settlements or kind of continent to continent settlement. But it is being configured to do something like this. So at least it will provide definitely efficiency if it really will become, probably not tomorrow, it will take might some time to do that, but it might go into this direction. I believe, I strongly believe that what is happening right now in the Bitcoin space and anything connected to it will dramatically increase the speed of adoption of the central bank digital currencies. So, or kind of whatever digital currency being issued by central banks, because people already know what, at least some of them, at least those 100 million today that are using Bitcoin, they already know how to use a wallet. They're already doing almost entirely electronically. And for them, and for the countries that are issuing central bank digital currency, it will be easier to target them as the first adopter of the digital currency. I do see in most of the, I mean, most of the part of the world where I'm working, most in North America and Asia. So governments are not really negative towards Bitcoin, you know, beside, you know, the comment you just made before reporting the Bank of England chairman. But if I look at the United States, right now, I think the mood has changed. They are kind of progressive and in favor of adopting a kind of a digital assets or digital currency layer above the, you know, the former and the incumbent systems in order to perhaps to increase adoption of digital transaction and why not to shorten the deployment of the digital dollar or the digital yuan or whatever, the digital euro in Europe. So to me, the blockchain or digital assets, it's kind of foundation that might help governments to speed up the process of adoption of national sovereign currencies.
Well, and then it makes me think more. So you say it's a complicated question. So how, when are we going to get easy answers, Ben Daniele?
By the end of this, let's say there are some metrics which all pointing out in the same direction. You know, we're still human, and sometimes we go back in history and say, hey, but that has never happened. So governments will never let someone else or someone else's currency to take control of their own currency. That is true. But if you take Bitcoin, Ethereum, whatever, none of them have the characteristics of a currency, so to say. So they are digital assets, yes. So this means they can be used as a store of value. Yes, for example, I mean, I always having the same question saying, okay, but how do you define Bitcoin for someone having no understanding of blockchain or Bitcoin or anything? I say, I mean, it's just a digital gold in the sense that if you want to make a payment to McDonald's, do you go with a piece of gold and you pay at the counter? No. So that's the same with Bitcoin. Bitcoin is not configured. At least probably in the original, in the former vision, it was considered, it was meant to be a peer-to-peer cash system. But right now is evolving in a much more sophisticated definition of a store of value or hard money. So which I strongly believe is much more appropriate for Bitcoin and all the other, you know, digital assets next to Bitcoin, starting from Ethereum and the others. But just to come back to your question, we have evidence, and that's for real, that institutionals are entering in the space pretty massively. And just to give you one parameter, if you go back in 2017, the platform that were trading cryptocurrencies, like the exchanges, Coinbase, just to name one, they have the stock of coins that was increasing over time. So they didn't have an inventory, so-called depletion, okay? So this means people like me and you, retail people, wanted to buy Bitcoin, what they used to. They were going on Bitcoin, on Coinbase, buying, let's say, a Bitcoin at that time between $10,000 and $20,000 and keeping the Bitcoin in the vault of the exchange, in the so-called hot wallet. And we were seeing in 2017, this stock was increasing over time, up to the peak back in December 2017. So that was a clear indicator that non-sophisticated investors, non-sophisticated, let's say, wealth managers, were going there, buying and stored to the exchange. While we know, once you have sophisticated investor, family office, and institutions, they don't keep their assets under custody under someone else's vault, but they keep under their vault. And what is happening right now, since December 2020, a little bit earlier then, we've seen a decrease, a progressive decrease of the stock of Bitcoin to the exchanges, pretty massive. Thousands of Bitcoin are being withdrawn every single day, reaching hard wallet of likely institutional. Obviously, you don't know, and you cannot take it for granted that it's 100% true statement. But it's an indicator that more sophisticated and likely institutional are buying a huge quantity of Bitcoin, 1 billion worth of Bitcoin, 100 million, 500 million. Some of them saying, hey, I bought Bitcoin. Some others, they don't want to do press release, because if they keep this under their treasury policies, whatever, say mutual funds, they don't want to publicly announce it. So, and this is going into this direction. So institutional are definitely started to play into it. I don't believe yet this is massively adopted, because the game is going to change, at least in the US, when the first ETF, so the exchange traded fund, will be released, if any, this year. So this means a big institution will invest into the ETF, and the ETF will have underlying assets. But definitely what we are observing right now is that the big money, and that was not the case in 2020 and even before, so the big money is entering into the space. Then we don't know what is going to happen, but at least we see a shift and pretty first sign of adoption of institutions into the space.
So you heard it here from Daniele. Interesting. So at one point we're talking how Bitcoin and cryptocurrency could work as payments, and now we talk about it is actually value retention, is actually to invest, and is it might be empirically demonstrated by at least what's happening right now, you know, with the different in official investment houses doing some of that. Well, interesting. And if you are talking about, if you're thinking about what that means for your business, that probably is changing our perspective once again. But for now, we have no more time, so we should probably need to follow up on that next time, because it looks like our stories with Bitcoin, cryptocurrencies, and blockchain is one that is very dynamic. And I like it today. We went into a lot more of interesting details. Always a source of knowledge, Daniele. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, my pleasure. I mean, I love this. I mean, it's my passion. It's my work. It's I'm fully on it. Sometimes it's difficult to think out of the box, because, you know, Bitcoin, at least for me, has given me the chance to understand a world that I didn't understand. So, and starting from a book called the Bitcoin Standard, actually, I started to dig into the details and then going to different directions. But I didn't quite understand the overall microfinance landscape. So it took me a couple of years to study, to work, and now, you know, working also with policymakers and governments to have kind of a full picture and being up to speed. But there's, you know, you have to daily follow what's going on in the space. It's pretty big. It's all connected.
Well, if you cannot follow every day, at least you've got a one podcast when it comes to your health. So come and see us next time. And as always, we're going to try to be a bit more social, not just telling you there is an email. There is an email for, you know, go to info@mobileecosystemforum.com. But if you are joining us in our social profiles from MEF, myself, Daniele Menzi, Dario Betti, ask us questions there as well. So things you want us to comment. And you will see more of these in the discussions and in the chats over there as well. Daniele, that's all we have time for right now. So thank you. And until the next time, then.
Thank you. My pleasure. See you next time.
Thank you. Bye-bye.